are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Moretz. What's on the program that puts its money where his fantasies are? On the Fantasy Sports Network, his countdown to kickoff continues. The New York Giants looking for their first win of the season, taking on the Detroit Lions this evening. The question is surrounding Odell Beckham Jr. I don't think Odell Beckham Jr. will be playing this evening, and that's why the New York Giants are three-point favorites. We'll break this game down. Steve Merrill going to hop up in it. Greg Sussman will join us. Paul Bovey joins us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. We've got a diversified cast and panel on the program this afternoon. We're going to run the gauntlet with Steve Merrill. We'll recap week two of the National Football League from a betting standpoint. We'll break down tonight's football game. We'll talk a little baseball. We'll talk a little NASCAR as Martin Truex Jr. This guy's just running away with everything right now on the circuit. You know what? He was a plus 350 favorite to win the championship. We told you it's pretty much a stone cold lock that this guy is going to lock this thing down. He's dialed in. He's pretty much he's clinched his spot into the next stage right now. But the problem in the NASCAR playoffs is it does essentially come down to one race. So when you're betting futures, you know, you get value, though, for waiting. And at that plus 350 with Truex before the race this weekend, massive value. So we're talking everything with Steve Merrill. Greg Sussman, we're going to focus in from a fantasy perspective. Paul Bovey joins us from Vegas. So we got Merrill's opinion and Bovey's opinion. I like to get multiple opinions when we're breaking down one game, and you get my opinion as well. All right, so week two of the National Football League wraps up this evening, the New York Giants and the Detroit Lions, which means it's time for another edition of Who Ruined Your Sunday? Now, we got to be honest with you. We did a hell of a lot better in week two than we did in week one. So I'm hating on less players, less coaches, and less teams than I was last week. But when it was all said and done, one team screwed me over pretty freaking hard. And not just as far as, you know, in the real world, but in the fantasy world as well. It was sort of correlated. The Seattle Seahawks. As you know, I really fully didn't trust the Seattle Seahawks to be laying 13.5, 14 points against the San Francisco 49ers. But we've seen in past years the dichotomy of the Seahawks offense at home and on the road. I cut them a little bit of slack after that putrid and pathetic and embarrassing performance against the Green Bay Packers. Yet, after we saw the Green Bay Packers get shredded like freaking Wisconsin cheese last night by the Atlanta Falcons, you have to wonder, are the Packers defense that good? Packers defense is all right. It's not as good as some people think it is. Not as horrible as others think it is. But nevertheless, you know, it was horrible, Seattle. So we cut them a little slack. And now they're playing the San Francisco 49ers, an inept San Francisco 49ers. And the Seattle Seahawks can get nothing going once again. We're not cutting the Seattle Seahawks any slack. The only thing that should be cut is their freaking piece of crap kicker, Blair Walsh. Now, in what world did the Seattle Seahawks think, you know what would be a great idea to replace Hoshka, who went to Buffalo? How about that guy that missed that 27-yard chip shot that we beat in the playoffs a couple of years ago? Like, in what world does this make sense? In what world? That's like seeing somebody with the worst freaking tattoo ever and then, you know, asking them, hey, who did your tat, man? I'm going to go there. Like, in what world does this make sense? Yeah, and you're wondering, well, why are you so upset, man? What did Blair Walsh do? What did Blair Walsh do? It's what he didn't do. You know what he didn't do? He was unable to successfully kick an extra freaking point, ruining my three-team parlay slash teaser. It's unbelievable. I didn't fully trust the Seahawks. I'm like, all right, there's no way in hell they don't win this football game by 4 points. It's late. They get the touchdown. I breathe a sigh of relief. And then I forgot. Oh, yeah. It's that guy who's the kicker. The only thing that Blair Walsh should be kicking is freaking cans down a street. This guy isn't qualified to be a greeter at Walmart, let alone a National Football League kicker. You know, thanks a lot, Blair Walsh. You know what? I heard that they're making a sequel of the Blair Witch Project. This one's called the Blair Walsh Project, and it's a hell of a lot scarier. It's just 90 minutes of watching this jerk off miss extra points and field goals. Like, honestly, how the hell is this guy in the National Football League? Yeah, so he misses the extra point, screws over the sweetheart teaser backers, screws over the pro-line backers, and once again reminds us that he's a horrible kicker. You know, like what? Does he have pictures? Does he have inside information? Does he know something about the Russian dossier? Like, what's the deal? Why is this guy in the National Football League still? The guy can't even make an extra point. All right, so that screwed me over, and it hit me pretty good, actually, as well, because I thought, hey, there's no way Seattle doesn't win by 4 points. But, you know, they screw me in the real world, and then in the fantasy world, you know, my money's gone. You know, I'm in a high-roll cash fantasy football league, $300 entry. You know, we're talking about like $3,600 for the winner. Russell Wilson's my quarterback. Yeah, how's that going? Jimmy Graham's my tight end. I got Jimmy Graham on two teams. You know what Jimmy Graham, his numbers are so far this year? Yeah, he's got 4 catches for 9 yards. 9 yards on the season. On the freaking season. And I tell you what, it's a damn good thing that I did well with my picks yesterday, because it was fantasy football freaking carnage. I got Dak Prescott. Ezekiel Elliott. Elliott had 9 carries. He somehow lost yards. He got 8 yards. You know, we can go down the list of fantasy football carnage. So, as I stated, it's a damn good thing that I won more bets than I lost. But it doesn't mean that I still don't severely dislike Blair Walsh. And stay tuned. Coming to a theater near you, the Blair Walsh Project, part two. 90 minutes of torture. Who ruined your Sunday?
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morency. All right, we've got three guests on the program today. We're pretty much focusing in on tonight's football game. We'll also talk a little fantasy football, general fantasy football talk with Greg Sussman. But we'll take a look at tonight's game from a DFS perspective as well. This segment is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Go to MyBookie.ag to place your bets and win today. They have live in-game betting. Go to MyBookie and MyBookie.ag. Use promo code GTD. Get 100% sign-up bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. MyBookie.ag. So we've got Paul Bovey's going to join us from Vegas in a couple of minutes. Greg Sussman will join us later on. We'll talk some fantasy football. Steve Merrill joins us from Virginia right now. ProSportsInfo.com, one of the covers experts. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Gabe, doing well.
So, Steve, week two wraps up this evening. And similar to last week, if you're betting sides, there's real no severe pattern. There's no severe pattern right now. Last week was 7-7-1. Coming into tonight, the favorites are 8-7 against the spread. So Giants win. We got a 9-7 week. Lions win. Suddenly, boom, it's 8-8 favorites and underdogs.
Yeah, not only that, Gabe, but we talked about why it's important to have multiple sports accounts. You mentioned MyBookieAG. We talked about it Friday. Shop around for those half points. You need two or three accounts, and look how many games landed near the number this weekend. I was involved in a couple of them yesterday. My two early kickoffs yesterday were the Panthers and the Patriots over. Carolina went from 7-6. It landed on 6. Patriot game actually was around 55-54 most of the day, but it was as high as 56.5, 57 briefly in the morning, and it landed 56. It's just amazing how tight these numbers are right now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know what's amazing, too? Generally, NFL numbers are kind of the same. But I've noticed this year there has been a lot of tweaks at different sports books. And also, Steve, there's never been as many online books as there is right now. And, you know, there's always been – there used to be a handful. There was a few. You had your mainstream Brit guys. You know, you had your sort of shady, you know, shady island books, etc. But now – there are just so many major sports books that are trusted and have, you know, they have hundreds of thousands of customers, etc. And you're right. That football game yesterday, I saw as high as 57 for the Patriots game. I got it at 55. And I got it at 55 at about 12:55 or so, Steve. So it really is amazing the different numbers and how, you know, depends on when and where you bet it. And we saw that on a couple of instances in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, not to get too deep into the inside baseball stuff here, but a couple years ago, and I think Malinsky actually touched on it, we saw some crazy line moves. I think it was 2 years ago, you know, a couple hours on NFL games, like 2-3-point moves, something we hadn't seen in a long time. Because like you said, with the modern sportsbook market, everybody kind of moves at the same time. Every point spread's within a half a point, and we don't see big moves anymore on game day. And Malinsky, I think, is the one that pointed it out a couple years ago. It was a Chinese syndicate. And they weren't necessarily winning, though. And it was kind of bizarre. Like, I disagreed with a lot of the moves. I didn't really consider it sharp money. And it was the same thing yesterday. I liked Carolina. I didn't understand why the Bills line dropped. I liked the over in the Patriots game. I didn't understand why that dropped. And my third play was the Sunday night game over the total, and that dropped a couple points yesterday morning, which is even more bizarre because why would anybody play the under on a Sunday night game early when the public always hammers the over late anyway?
You know, that Carolina-Buffalo game, I guess if you're into defensive football, it was you could call it entertaining. But, man, the offenses were bad. I had the Buffalo Bills plus 7, Steve. All right, I had them in the Super Contest, and I had them in a teaser. So I was pulling for the plus 7, but it's amazing. They were really lucky to, you know, that's a bad beat for the push. Like, Carolina dominated that game.
Correct.
And Cam Newton had a guy wide open in the end zone, and they settled for the field goal late. That would have been the cover right there. I felt fortunate to get out of there with depending on when you bet it, like you said, because there were sevens out there earlier in the week.
Yeah, I felt like Carolina was the right side in that one. You know, my one concern going in, and we touched on it Friday, and we also talked about, you know, on the Carolina show that I do in Charlotte each Friday, was McDermott having a little bit of a coaching edge maybe, knowing the players. But, you know, that's a different team this year. You've got McCaffrey at running back. Now you got Keekly back in at linebacker. And, you know, the other thing, too, about the NFL, I think that angle works better in college football. In the NFL, it's pretty much a coaching carousel. I think you can make an argument that half the games every week there's a coach that knows something about the other team.
I think, yeah, you can also make an argument that the coaches are they're far more important in college as well. You know, the NFL is a player league, right? The players are making the plays. You know, Shanahan's not in Atlanta anymore. Oh, their offense is going to regress with Sarkisian. You know, what do you have? Because Kyle Shanahan is Matt Ryan's arm. Because Kyle Shanahan is Devontae Freeman's nifty moves in the open field. Because Kyle Shanahan has anything to do with the fact that Julio Jones is a freak of nature. You know, a lot of that stuff, I agree. And the funny thing is, if anything, early in the game, Carolina was gashing Buffalo, man. You know, there were all kinds of open holes. It was like, you know what's funny? I watched every play of that game. It's almost like Rivera said, all right, he thinks we're going to do this. And McDermott was like, all right, stick with it. I'm telling you guys. And then you saw as the game went on, McDermott's defense started to clamp down. The Buffalo Bills have an elite defense. They really do. But that offense is putrid. Absolutely putrid.
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, is Carolina has now quietly held 9 of their last 12 opponents to less than 20 points. You know, that defense was Super Bowl caliber 2 years ago, really dropped off last year, but they had, you know, they lost the cornerback to the Redskins. They had some injuries with Keekly out, as I mentioned. But they've started to turn things around. I think Carolina's a play-on team this year, and we'll see about Buffalo. I think right now it's buy or beware with Buffalo, because like you said, that was fortunate for that game to be as close as the final score it was.
Yeah, I don't see how Denver doesn't beat them this Sunday, even though the game is in Buffalo. Yeah, through two games, the Carolina Panthers guys have given up 6 points. They're giving up 6 points. All right, they played San Francisco and they played Buffalo, but nevertheless, it's been a strange start to the National Football League season. And tonight's game is almost a symbolic symbol of the way the year is. It's a tough game tonight. And you got the Giants laying 3. You got the Odell Beckham stuff. I don't know if anybody knows something that I don't know, but seems, you know, oh, it's status up in the air. I don't think he's going to be playing. I believe we're into, it's been exactly a month, actually, since 30 days since it's happened. They were talking, you know, that he needs about 6 weeks. I wouldn't force him back, but the Giants offense has real issues without him. They just don't have a deep down the field threat at all, and they have no ground game, so it's a bad toxic combination for them.
Yeah, we always talk about overreacting to week one results and how you have to be so careful. And you look at yesterday's results. Tennessee loses outright as a favorite. Jacksonville wins outright as a dog in week one. Jacksonville loses big yesterday. I thought the biggest reversal from week one was the Rams-Redskin game. Rams probably are like a three-point underdog. Now they were a three-point favorite yesterday, after the Redskins lose and the Rams win big. So both of those, if you took the contrarian perspective, worked out. You can make the same argument tonight. Giants looked awful last Sunday night. Lions, meanwhile, went outright as a home dog against Arizona. We'll see if it holds up again. It is tough to back New York, though, with that offense right now, especially without Odell Beckham maybe in the lineup. They were bad last year, and they were terrible last week against Dallas. But as I always say, be careful overreacting to just week one results, because as we saw yesterday, it usually turns pretty quick in week two.
Yeah, you know what? That's the thing with betting on football, though. There really is no trend. Because for every trend, there's an opposite trend. And for every argument, there's another argument. And I totally understand what you're saying. And I told people that. I said, week one was 10-5 to the under. I said, watch every game be a track meet in week two. Well, it didn't really work out all that way. But nevertheless, the unders are still 18-11-2 on the season. But let's look at Seattle. I sort of figured, all right, Seattle struggled on the road in week one. Sort of see a comparison between the New York Giants and the Seahawks, okay? Two teams that people are pretty high on coming into the year. Two teams that opened up the road on the road against tough opponents. Two teams that were completely flat offensively. Seattle weren't any better at all once they got back home in week two.
Yeah, and what about the Cincinnati Bengals Thursday night? They were terrible in week one, got shut out at home. And
maybe they're just bad. Maybe the Giants are just bad, and their offense is just bad, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly the point. I think you have to be very careful with offense, because you can't just all of a sudden fix offensive problems when you're in a bad offense. And you see that in college football as well. You see it in all sports, really. You can't just all of a sudden make offense if you don't have the talent. And they're missing their best player on offense, and it's a legitimate injury if Beckham doesn't play. Normally these NFL injuries, especially like a wide receiver, are vastly overrated, I think. Most running backs you can just plug in and play.
Yeah, but he's receiver. So – it's different with him because he's the guy, right?
He is.
It's like the Oklahoma City Thunder being without Russell Westbrook, essentially.
Yeah, other than the quarterback, Beckham's pretty important for any other team in the league, I would say that. Because normally a receiver you can replace, but they just don't have enough weapons either, because he draws double teams occasionally. And that's the other thing you got to keep in mind, is he opens things up
exactly.
for the other offensive. I don't even want to say weapons, because they don't really have
any. Brandon Marshall's old, man. The guy had one catch against the Cowboys. He can't get open deep down the field. Yep. Sterling Shepard's okay, but he's not a deep down the field threat. Shepard actually had seven catches last week, and I think he'll have a decent night. Now, they played last year, Steve, and the Giants beat them 16-7. I remember that game, and they were 4.5-point favorites, and the total was 42. I got to pull the trigger with the Lions. I think a teaser's a nice play. I get the Lions up to plus 10 and hold my breath and hope that these two teams can get to 35.
I think the Lions going to be interesting to watch tonight as well if we do get word on Beckham officially, and that'll probably come within an hour of kickoff or so, because this line was as high as 5.5 earlier in the week. Other spots had 4.5. And then it quickly came down to 3.5, 3, and that was a lot due to the fact he might not play again. If there's any word he plays, this line goes up to probably 4 or more by kickoff.
Yeah, and it's funny because he's actually probably worth more than 1 point to them. Yeah, it's a good point. If you like the Lions, probably wait, because the line's not going to go down.
Exactly right.
They already think he's not playing. That's why it's 3 as it is. So it's not going to go down if he doesn't play. But you're right. If for some reason, Beckham's playing, I think it might go up to 4.5 or even 5, Steve, because I think the public will get all goo-goo and crazy. And God, who knows what he's going to bring to the table anyways, too. The guy hasn't played football in a full month. He's barely practiced since it was August 21st he went down.
Yeah, I think you could probably make an argument to the under. We hate playing unders in these primetime games. We talk about it every year, but Detroit did put up 30-some points last week against Arizona. But if you look at their rushing offense, they ran the ball very poorly. It was all passing. Giants had no running either, and the Giants actually completed 76% of their passes against Dallas for over 5 yards per pass, which is a terrible number. So basically,
that's why I like Manning's prop. I like Manning's prop to the over tonight, his completions, because people are going to – it's kind of low. It's 24.5, and I think the general perception is, well, Beckham's not there. Yeah, but they don't have any ground game, and their receivers can't get open deep down the field. So what does that mean? It means there's going to be a million little dumps like he did against Dallas.
Had 19 completions in that game, and they were losing the whole time. So that'd be the only concern at 24.5.
No, he ended up with more against Dallas in the end.
Okay, so it might have been Detroit. One team last week had 19. I don't have it in front of me, but it might have been Detroit then, because they both completed over 70% of their passes last week. But the real difference was the yards per pass. Detroit was like it's been New York was at 5.2. You know, so exactly what you're saying. It basically is their running game because they have no running game.
Yeah, Eli, 29 completions last week. And what was Stafford, Warman? We got Warman in master control. If you can, what was Stafford last week?
Yeah, you're right.
Stafford was like 28 or something like that.
Yeah, no, it was 29. I said 19. I meant 29. You're exactly right. Because Covers, actually, I was talking to Covers earlier about the game. I sent him over a quote for their preview, and I put those numbers in there. I think he was like 29 for 38 or 36 or something.
Yeah, but it was only for like 220-something yards. Like
exactly.
You said,
5 yards per pass, which is a really bad number to be completing 76% of your passes.
Yeah, but that's why it's good, though, for the over and the prop for the completions. That's why we take,
exactly right. No,
we take advantage of these things. Okay, so so you're leading with the under in this football game. What about the side?
You know, at three or less, I like that contrarian call. Like I said, you know, you hold your nose and pull the trigger, obviously, because they looked awful last week. But historically, if you take these opposite results in week two, you win more than you lose in the NFL.
All right, Steve. So baseball, Dodgers got back on track a little bit. At least they're not in that slide anymore. One good thing about the Dodgers, if you're betting on them now, you know they are trying. You know, it's not like they're going to be mailing it in for the last couple of weeks. I've sort of taken a step back from baseball, but I'm like a weekday guy, Steve. Like the weekends, I have no idea what's going on in baseball. I'm watching college football. I'm watching boxing. I'm watching UFC. I have no idea what's going on the weekends in baseball, but I'm back to the grind. And, you know, normally I wait till Tuesday because I got a bunch of football picks, but I do like a couple of baseball games tonight. Thing with the Dodgers, they're minus 340. I was thinking about the run line, but I don't really want to lay minus 170 on the road on the run line. It is Kershaw against Pavetta tonight.
Yeah, Dodgers are turning it around. You know, the Nationals were in a strange spot last week. They were within about four games when the Dodgers were on that 10-game lose streak after last Sunday a week ago. And Washington had already clinched. And they had to kind of decide, do we want to make a push and try to get that overall number one seed, which probably won't happen because you knew L.A. was going to start winning again at some point. And I think they made the right decision. They're starting to rest some guys. They lost the first two games in the three-game series at home this weekend. They did win 7-1 last night against the Dodgers. But it looks like Washington's kind of taking a step back. Dodgers are trying to get some momentum back, but still that's a huge number to lay tonight. I don't want to say these are preseason games, but they're getting pretty close to that.
Red Sox and Orioles, this number surprises me a little bit. It's the Pfister factor. He just doesn't get any respect. There's the perception that he's the weak link, yet he's actually pitched very well over the last month. His last start wasn't great, but before that, four consecutive rock-solid starts. And the Red Sox win when Pfister's on the hill. Red Sox have they've won 8 of 10, they've won 9 of 11, taking on a Baltimore Oriole team that's in a free fall right now. Orioles are falling apart. I mean, this is the week where the season fell apart for the Baltimore Orioles. I know Bundy's been okay this year. He's pitched well. But, you know, I don't know. Is he on a pitch count? What's the deal? It's only his second time he's pitched in 14 days.
Yeah, I mentioned this in my power rankings. The Orioles are probably the coldest team in the league right now. They've completely fallen apart. Meanwhile, Boston, one of the hottest teams in the league. So tough to play anything but the Red Sox in this game. Boston making a push
into the playoffs. As an underdog, Steve, plus 100.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very right. You go through the database, I bet you don't find too many incidents where you have a dichotomy from hot, cold like that, and you're getting an underdog price.
All right, so speaking of hot, we got about a minute left here. Martin Truex Jr. should have just clicked the plus 350. This guy's going to win this thing. But as I stated off the top of the program, as dominant as he's been, it still really comes down to one race. But
right.
Unbelievable. He gets it done. He was plus 333. We talked about him on Friday. Plus 33 to win the race. He was plus 350. Going into the weekend to win the championship. I haven't seen any updated championship odds yet.
Yeah, in fact, two other times the winner of Chicago has won the overall championship with this format. He won Chicago last year, didn't get the title, but he came close to winning the championship. He was still one of the best drivers last year as well. Kyle Busch is obviously as good this year. They're both Toyotas. In fact, Brad Keselowski tweeted earlier this week or last week that they're at a different level, and I've been saying that all season. I do think guys like Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott, who ran second yesterday, could make some noise because they're very good on these intermediate tracks. But, yeah, I mean, Truex is going to be there in Miami. It's just a matter of if he can be the top finisher out of the four that matters in that final race.
Yeah, that's the thing when you bet the future. Kyle Busch had a rough day, ended up finishing in 15th place. He's on the outside looking in right now. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. disaster for Ricky yesterday. But you mentioned Chase Elliott. He was in the mix, man, finished in second place.
Yeah, and he's going to advance, and he could do some damage in that middle round. He did not get a win this year, but he had a lot of second-place finishes and strong runs during the regular season. Kyle Busch came in third in overall playoff points, so he'll still probably advance. He actually switched, something to mention Friday, he switched pit crews with Daniel Suarez, the 19 team, this past week. And he had some issues yesterday, and that's what cost him actually a chance to win the race, maybe. He got several laps down in the middle of the race. So that's something to keep an eye on going forward here the next couple races.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. We got to get out of here. But they started the playoff, this stuff. So you know, guys that won races would be rewarded. It would be amazing if Chase Elliott ends up somehow winning this thing, somehow without winning. All right, we got to get out of here, Steve. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, Paul Bovey joins us next from Las Vegas.
Ezekiel Elliott, Carl Anthony Towns, Corey Seager. Those are the rookies of the year, much like the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The fastest growing fantasy sports network on radio is completely free, 24/7. Listen to us live at fntsy.com/radio or download the app right now in the Google Play Store or on iTunes.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Paul Bovey will join us in a couple of moments, actually, from Vegas. We'll bring in Greg Sussman right now, Roto Expert, SportsGrid.com, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Greg, always a pleasure, man. How you doing?
Hey, Gabe, thanks for having me back.
So here we are. We're nearly 2 weeks in. We've got one game left on the board so far. And looking at the overall numbers, the fantasy numbers through 2 weeks, and it's pretty bleak, man. It's bleak. It's like a cold November day in Siberia or something like that. Because if you're top pick, you're in a season long league, you're drafting third, you're drafting fifth, etc., you're drafting first. If you don't get it right or something goes wrong, you can't come back from that. You know, you're not going to be able to replace a David Johnson. You know, David Johnson gets hurt, you're basically screwed. You know, that's your star player that's gone. But it's not just with the injury. So you have Odell Beckham, but we have big-time players who are top 10 guys, top 15 guys, who are bringing absolutely nothing to the table. Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell through two games. 117 yards, averaging 3.2 yards a clip, zero touchdowns. Michael Thomas. He's my new Sammy Watkins, Greg. I bought in on Michael Thomas. I got him on a couple of teams. Dude's got 10 catches, no touchdowns, and 134 yards in two games. I could go down the list. Jimmy Graham. I thought, Jimmy Graham's in a big bounce-back situation. I've got Russell Wilson and Jimmy Graham on season-long teams. How's Jimmy Graham doing? 4 catches, 9 yards through 2 weeks.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot today, how many big-name players are just doing nothing. There's a lot more than this you mentioned, right? DeMarco Murray, absolutely nothing. Larry Fitzgerald, absolutely nothing. Some of these first-rounders, at least Odell Beckham didn't play, right? Like, he can't hurt you if he's not in your lineup. David Johnson was a disaster, even when he was on the field. This first and second round, at least the good news, I guess, is that none of them are really working out. Even LeSean McCoy yesterday for your Bills just didn't do all that much. The first and second rounders early, for the most part, have definitely been letdowns. And all I can say is it's early, right? Everyone's favorite player was Terrell Pryor coming into this year, and Terrell Pryor's done less than nothing. But the Redskins' offense didn't get going until after week 2 last year anyway. This week, the Redskins play the Raiders, so I expect it to turn around. I think for a lot of the players you named, I think it'll turn around too. Michael Thomas at least had 5 for 89 yesterday. Like, I think it is changing and trending upward for some of these guys. Others, it just won't. That's fantasy football, right? Like, if we were 100% accurate, we'd be rich. We're not all rich.
No, unfortunately. Not yet. I'm going to, or I'll die trying. As 50 Cent stated. But you look at the quarterbacks. Okay, Brady had a big game yesterday. That was sort of to be expected. And he had a pretty good game, actually, in week 1, you know, statistically, even though they ended up losing that football game. But if you look at the successful quarterbacks, the most successful quarterbacks through the first 2 weeks, it's no one has them. You know, Alex Smith, 4 touchdowns. So it's one of these deals, like, I'm playing in fantasy football leagues. We got scores of like 82 to 76 and stuff like that. I got Jameis Winston yesterday. Yeah, great. They look great. He had 12 points, Greg.
Oh, I know. 12 points. With you.
We go down to quarterbacks, though, of quarterbacks absolutely putting up absolutely freaking nothing. And there's so many of them that are giving us absolutely nothing. It's crazy.
Well, this is why everyone says wait on a quarterback. Yes, Tom Brady was unbelievable yesterday, although Brandon Cooks kind of fits in the last question, right? As a first or second round pick that's underperformed. But they always tell you to wait on a quarterback because you can find one late. Two of the top three quarterbacks are Carson Wentz, who people like, but not as a top 10 quarterback, and Trevor Siemian, who no one liked. Trevor Siemian's been the best quarterback in the NFL through the first 2 weeks, and
well,
nobody drafted
him. Who's throwing all those touchdowns? What's the three best? So we'll take Brady out yesterday. What's the three best quarterback performances? Sam Bradford, Alex Smith, Trevor Siemian.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. Like, those are the guys. Like, who had Trevor Siemian yesterday?
Nobody had Trevor Siemian yesterday, unless you're in a two-quarterback league. And the fact is, he just absolutely diced through Dallas' secondary. He was pinpoint with Emmanuel Sanders. He was right on Demaryius Thomas. And what we liked about Denver was that you could predict everything. And it's held true. And yet, here we sit. Nobody wanted the quarterback. It's funny. If you look at Minnesota, everyone loves Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen and Dalvin Cook and Kyle Rudolph. But nobody wanted Sam Bradford. He goes out on the first Monday night of the year, and he crushes it. And then it's the same thing for Denver. You wanted Emmanuel Sanders. You wanted Demaryius Thomas. You were okay on C.J. Anderson, but nobody wanted Trevor Siemian. He proves you wrong the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been insane, insane. So another guy and a team as a whole. So they've only played one game, and there's two ways of looking at this. Okay, you know that they're back home right now. They're going to turn things around, or it'll be like the Seattle Seahawks. And I talked about this earlier in the show. Seattle struggled on the road in Week One against a decent opponent in Green Bay. You know, people cut them some slack. All right, they go back home. They struggle again. Russell Wilson, another made big-time quarterback, putting up next to nothing. Minimal numbers right now. Eli Manning and this Giants offense, I was very concerned coming into the season about their ground game. And I don't know why they're not concerned about this, Greg. You know, nothing against Paul Perkins. He's not a legitimate number one back. Defensive coordinators are not worried about this. They know the Giants can't run the football. And then conversely, when Odell Beckham's not there, they got no one that can go deep down the field. Marshall couldn't get open against the Cowboys. Shepard's not a deep down the field threat. It puts Eli Manning in a pretty tough situation, and Eli Manning got sacked three times. He was under pressure a lot as well. You know, I thought the Giants were overrated coming into this year. I'm interested to see tonight's football game, and I don't want to hear if Odell doesn't play as an excuse, because one football team can't be that fragile. The one wide receiver's out and you fall apart like this.
So I think your comparison to the Seattle Seahawks is dead on. It's a team that obviously had offensive line issues, and they did nothing to improve those. I mean, saying Luke Jokel isn't that answer. The Giants did less than nothing. They just said, hey, continuity. They'll play together for the second year in a row. They'll get better. It hasn't happened. The offensive line is brutal, which gives Eli no time. And Eli, much like Carson Palmer, can't move. Like, you have to give him time to find his weapons. And both Carson Palmer, Russell Wilson, they don't have zero time to do anything. And the Giants' struggles will continue as long as the offensive line struggles continue. I understand what you're saying. You thought the Giants would be overrated this year because, you know, they have no way of moving the football other than Odell Beckham Jr. And even when Odell's out there, there is no time to throw him the ball. It is a disaster for the Giants. And I think, like you said, with the Seahawks, who struggled coming home after being away in Week One, I think you're going to see the same for the Giants tonight.
You know, to me, the one weakness the Detroit Lions have that people talk about is the secondary. They allowed opposing quarterbacks to complete 72% of their passes last year, yet it's not really the guys in the secondary. The guys, they've got decent players back there. They don't really get a pass rush. That's their big problem. They don't get a pass rush, so plays are extended too long, yet the Giants won't be able to exploit that. I like Detroit coming into this football game. And then conversely, let's talk about some of the Detroit's weapons. Every year, people, Golden Tate, I don't know about him, and I don't know about Golden Tate. Well, here he is, Week One again, 10 catches, 107 yards on 12 targets. So, you know, Golden Tate's just so freaking consistent. It's clear that he's one of Stafford's guys, and Stafford's going to find him. But the trendy kid on the block tonight, Kenny Golladay. Everybody's very excited to see what Kenny Golladay can do, and I like what Jim Bob Cooter said. He said, hey, this kid's not going to score two touchdowns every week. Everyone chill out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the Giants secondary Should be pretty good tonight. We'll see if Janoris Jenkins plays. I know he's questionable coming in, which will obviously help Detroit's wide receiver weapons. But listen, Kenny Galladay is going to have his bumps and bruises along the way. He'll have his big games. He'll have his letdown games. I think tonight's not a game I want to start Kenny Galladay in. I just don't think the matchup's well. He matches up well against the Giants secondary. But I think Golden Tate is like the perfect guy. And everybody's talking about Eric Ebron, but Jimmy Graham's hurt. Jordan Reed is hurt. Tyler Eifert's hurt. Rob Gronkowski's hurt. So every tight end that's always hurt is hurt. Don't be surprised if Eric Ebron then gets hurt tonight.
Yeah, I don't. I'm done with Ebron. Nothing against him personally, but I've been burnt too many times in past years. The Giants tight end, the kid looked good, actually. But yeah. We talk about it. I don't know if they really needed that. Did they need, okay, you bring in Engram. Engram actually looked damn good in the first game. He's one of the few guys who's getting open, but they didn't need to bring Brandon Marshall in. They should have addressed, they could have addressed a couple of other needs. You know, one crazy thing, there's some new school data that we have. I've never seen a stat like this before, Greg, and I've been around a long time. How fast the players go on the field. You ever seen this stuff? Kenny Galladay was the fastest player last week in the NFL. 19.43 miles per hour he ran. When he ran on that bomb, he reached a peak speed of 19 miles an hour, man. It's freaking insanity, man.
I saw Carlos Hyde last night. Like, when he cut back left, gashing the Seattle defense, he was running like 15.6 miles per hour. I'm just like, what is this? It was very confusing. Just going back to Evan Engram for a second, it was just another example of the Giants not addressing their biggest need. Once Garrett Bowles went off the board right before them to Denver, that was it. They froze, and they drafted Evan Engram, who's nice. I mean, I agree. He looks good, and I think he'll help the Giants, but he doesn't block, and it just won't help the Giants.
It's like a move the Colts used to do. That's what the Giants did. You know what I mean? Ah, you know what? We got Odell. Thing is, you drafted Shepard last year. Right. He's good. It worked. You know what I mean? You got the guy. It worked. You sign another stiff free agent guy, you throw him in here. But no, like you said, no, we'll go for Marshall. And let's draft a tight end with our first round pick. Let's not address the offensive line. Let's not get a running back. All right, so, you know, you reap what you sow. We got to get out of here. What's your prediction tonight?
Hey, my prediction tonight, I'll go with the Lions 24. And once again, for the eighth consecutive game, the Giants do not get over 20. They put up 13 tonight, 24-13.
Ooh, easy win for the Lions, says Greg Sussman. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Paul Bovey comes back when we come back. Paul Bovey from Vegas.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does our breakdown of the Detroit Lion New York Giant Monday Night Football contest this evening. Well, Greg Sussman just joined us, and he's in New York, and he calls an 11-point win for the Detroit Lions. Says 24-13, Lions and the Giants offense struggles again. Steve Merrill joined us earlier. Merrill is leaning with the under in this football game. It's a low number, but you can make an argument and ask where the point's going to come from for the New York Giants this evening. But then again, the Detroit Lions, never going to be confused for the Steel Curtain or anything like that. Let's bring in Paul Bovey right now. You can find him over at his picks over at VegasInsider.com. Paul Bovey's in Las Vegas right now. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing great, Gabe. It was a great weekend and excited for tonight's Monday night game, my Giants.
Yeah, how'd you do over the weekend with the picks?
Well, we went 4-0 on Vegas Insider. I was pretty happy with that. My college game, unfortunately, bad beat in the first half, and it went down in flames. But overall, can't complain with the 4-0, and it was profitable.
Well done. Well done. So, all right, let's you know, you live in L.A. You're in Vegas right now. But, you know, you go back and forth, but you live in L.A. So speaking of L.A., back to reality in the land of fantasy – for the LA football teams. Let's start off with the Rams. We talked about the Rams and whether there was a how much of an overreaction there was after the Redskins lost in week one. Redskins dominated them, but Rams showed some fight coming back. The Rams are definitely a better football team this year. There's no debating that, but it's insanity to me. I see the opening number for Thursday night's football game, and here we have the Rams are actually going to be, they're favored three times in a row now. 3 weeks in a row, the Rams have been favored against the spread.
Yeah, 3 weeks in a row. Gabe, unfortunately, the wide receivers got shut down yesterday for the Rams and Woods and Watkins. I think they combined for three catches. Have to do better in that area. Last year, 28-0, the Rams get shut out. Of course, it's a different cast of characters this year. Case Keenum was quarterback last year. Kenny Britt was the receiver. They've retooled that offensive line, and I think they're worthy of favoritism here versus a San Francisco team with Bobby Hoyer, who's combined for 292 yards passing in his first two games. Very lackluster offense there for the 49ers. Rams definitely deserve to be favored.
Where are the points coming from in this game? Total's 41. I hate betting on unders, man, but, God, that total of 41, does that catch your eye right now?
It catches my eye, but I'm going to see what happens. I think both teams may get their offense going a little bit. It's early in the week, and we got to see where the mojo heads. You know what I mean?
My early lean is 49ers right now, but we'll have time to take a look at this football game. All right, let's jump in tonight. Detroit Lions and the New York Giants. And I mentioned L.A. I got a correlation here. The Lions are the Lions, all right? They never really change. They are what they are on a yearly basis. And there's a few teams in the NFL, you know, the Bills are the Bills. They'll battle, their offense, like nothing changed. I've been a Bills fan since 78. It's the same thing on a yearly basis. The Detroit Lions are the same thing, and the Chargers are the same thing. I saw you tweeting about the Chargers, and oh, bad luck, they missed a couple of kicks. You know, they could be 2-0, that's football. But that's the Chargers. People are going to blame the Ho. They're going to blame the young Ho guy. But, remember Nate Keating missed the kick against the Jets in the playoffs years ago. You know, remember they could have beaten the Patriots in the AFC Conference Championship game. They picked off Brady, and then they fumbled the interception return. Like, this is what they do. Like, I'm telling you, the Chargers don't get associated with the Bills, Lions, and Browns of the world, but they really are. They're just the West Coast version of them.
I feel bad for Phillip Rivers, Gabe. He went 31-39 yesterday, 300-plus yards, did everything he needed to do to win that football game. And you can make an argument that last week against the Broncos, even if that kick is made, it sends the game to overtime. You don't know if they're going to pull it out in overtime. But yesterday, this is for a win. This is what kickers are paid to do. And as I tweeted, kickers are the most underappreciated, undervalued players on the team, and they are such an inflection point because they create wins versus losses, losses versus wins, and I think it's a shame for the Chargers. And by the way, Gabe, you're right. The Lions are the Lions. I've been watching this team for a very long time, and with the exception of the early 90s, they've done nothing. They could have went to the Super Bowl if they beat the Redskins back in that championship game. They didn't do it. And they're just a team that just – it's like they're stuck in the mud, and they just don't go anywhere.
Well, that's the thing, but they're not awful. They're a better version. I've always said this. Like, I see a lot of – Phillip Rivers and Matt Stafford, a lot of similarities. And you got the Lions and the Bills. It's like we're dysfunctional cousins. But the Lions are sort of the moderately more successful ones, even though Lion fans are tortured. But over the years, this is a type of football game that the Lions lose, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And
they lost this game last year. Sorry, Paul. They lost this game last year 17-6. I'm telling you, though, there's something a little different about this team. They've got a good they've got a good team chemistry. And they got a lot of weapons. I know they don't have a ground game, but I don't mind this Abdullah Riddick stuff. I like what Galladay's bringing to the table, going deep. Golden Tate's a stud. They got a lot of weapons. You know, I like the Lions tonight coming into this game. What's your take?
My take is this is a very difficult game to play because there are so many injuries. So many players right now are on the bubble. not only Odell, but you have Goodson at the linebacker position. He had 18 tackles last week in the game in the debacle versus Dallas. Second-year player, you have Janoris Jenkins, who played in that 17-6 game last year. If he is out, it will weaken them at the corner. And then you have Bobby Hart, offensive lineman. He is also questionable tonight. So with those injuries, can you really play this game tonight with any degree of confidence? Now, I posted the under, but a lot of this has to do with whether these guys are in the lineup or out. You know, with Beckham, the last two games, without Beckham, I should say, the Giants have been outscored 68-20. He is a huge piece of that Giants offense.
You know, the Detroit Lions don't have a great pass rush, but nevertheless, and we just talked about this with Greg Sussman, your quarterback has to be mobile in today's National Football League. Unless you're Tom Brady and, you know, you've got that, you know, that you play the style that you do and you get rid of it in 1.2 seconds, et cetera, all the time. That's what the Giants are, you know, Eli Manning's going to have to sort of, revert to at this juncture of his career. 29 completions last week, a lot of dink and dunk stuff. They don't have anybody that can get down the field. Brandon Marshall can't stretch the field. They don't have anybody. So, they, you know, Sterling Shepard can't really stretch the field. Engram, the tight end out of Mississippi, is good, but he's not stretching the field. And they can't protect Eli Manning long enough to wait for that to happen. So they got to do a lot of dink and dunk stuff. And then you see Eli's passes always get batted down at the line. I don't know where the points are going to come from for the Giants tonight.
Well, Eli seemed very confident. He came out with a proclamation. Don't worry, it's only one game. We're going to be fine. Kind of along the same lines as Aaron Rodgers, but the difference is Aaron Rodgers will always back it up. Eli, I don't know. We'll see.
All right. We've only got 30 seconds already, unfortunately, Paul. So you're going with the under tonight?
If I have to, if somebody puts a gun to my head and say, make a play on tonight's game, it would be the under, crossing my fingers that Beckham would be out. And maybe the offensive lineman is out, and maybe Goodson is in, who made 18 tackles last week. So these things are very much on the bubble, and I would prefer personally to sit back and play live wagering. I love live wagering.
All right, Paul Bovey, check him out, VegasInsider.com, coming off a smoking 4-0 NFL Sunday yesterday. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Paul Bovey with us. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with our plays of the day. We got a bunch of props.
Ezekiel Elliott, Carl Anthony Towns, Corey Seager. Those are the rookies of the year, much like the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The fastest growing fantasy sports network on radio is completely free, 24/7. Listen to us live at fntsy.com/radio or download the app right now in the Google Play Store or on iTunes.
It's time for our plays of the day. Monday Night Football. It's a tricky game this evening, though, isn't it? Even with or without Odell Beckham Jr., this game's a tricky game. These two teams played last year. Similar situation. It was in New York. Giants won 17-6. So it was a low-scoring football game, and it's a low total this evening. I'm going to take the Detroit Lions tonight. I don't like what I saw from the New York Giants in week one. And I think they're going to have a hard time turning it around this quickly, specifically without Odell Beckham Jr., and I don't think Odell Beckham Jr. is going to play. Give me the Detroit Lions in a close football game. I think we're looking at a 2017, maybe a 23-20 game. I think it's going to be a close game, and I'd rather be on the underdog here, who I think is the better team right now with the Lions. Give me a 7-point teaser to the over, 35 Lions plus 10 to the over. Matt Stafford, over under 23.5 completions. He's going to get there, all right? They played last year, as I mentioned. He had 24, even in the 17-6 loss, a pass-happy league. Theoretically, he throws a bunch of passes to him. Golden Tate. The guy's a monster, man. All right, he had 10 catches last week. He had 8 catches in a game last year against the Giants. He's a PPR machine. Let's go over to 5.5 receptions. Eli Manning can't throw the football deep. He doesn't have anybody to throw the football deep to, but he completed 29 passes last week, over 24.5. Vereen, 44.5 yards, total receiving and rushing yards. Long field goal, over 43.5. Red Sox shouldn't be underdogs. And gave me the Diamondbacks to beat the Padres. May the winners be yours.